Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, the Doctrine of Creation, Part 5. For more resources from Dr. Craig, go to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been talking in recent weeks about the doctrine of creation. And you'll remember that I tried to distinguish between creation and conservation by saying that in creation, this is God's original bringing of the world into being, and then conservation is God sustaining the world in being moment by moment. And I argued that the difference between creation and conservation is not to be found in God or in His action, which is the same in both cases, but rather it's to be found in the object of the action, namely that in creation there is no object. The object is constituted by the act of creation, whereas in conservation, God acts upon an object which is, as it were, already there to preserve it in being over time. And so you'll recall, if you look at your notes, that I argued that to say God creates some entity E at a time T, God creates E at T, should be understood to say that God brings it about that E comes into being at T. So God creates an entity E at a time T if and only if God brings it about that E comes into being at T. And that then raises the question of what does it mean to come into being? And I provided the following analysis of what it means to come into being. E comes into being at T if and only if, and then there were three conditions. One, that E exists at T. Two, that T is the first time at which E exists. And thirdly, that E's existing at T is a tensed fact. So E comes into being at T if and only if, one, E exists at T. Two, T is the first time at which E exists. And three, E's existing at T is a tensed fact. And then I distinguish that from conservation by the following. God conserves E if and only if God acts upon E to bring about E's existing from sometime T until sometime T star later than T through every subinterval in the interval T to T star. So God conserves an entity E if and only if God acts upon E to bring about E's existing from T until some later time T star through every subinterval between T and T star. And I highlighted then the importance of a tensed theory of time for this concept of creation. Clause 3 says that E's existing at T is a tensed fact. That is to say, E doesn't exist at T in a sort of tenseless way. That is to say, E actually comes into being at T. This is not just a tenseless existing of E at T in the way that, say, an inch exists on a yardstick. Rather, this entity actually comes into being at that moment. This is a tensed fact. And so I argued that the doctrine of creation ex nihilo really does presuppose, I think, a tensed theory of time. That is to say, a theory of time according to which all events in time are not on an ontological par. They're not all equally real. Future events don't in any sense exist. Past events no longer exist. What exists is the present. And temporal becoming is a real and objective feature of the world. Let's contrast this with a tenseless view of time. Let's imagine that time is sort of like a block. And there are different moments in time that are earlier and later than each other, which we can represent by these planes that bisect the block. So we could go here from T1 to T2 to T3 and so forth. And on a tenseless view of time, God just exists outside the space-time block. And it has a beginning only in the sense that a yardstick has a beginning, namely there's a first inch. But it doesn't really come into being. God acts on all of the events in time in a sort of tenseless way. And so this entity exists co-eternally with God, in a sense. There is no state of affairs in the actual world which consists of God alone without the universe. And my contention is that that is not a sufficiently robust doctrine of creation to be biblical. The biblical doctrine of creation involves the affirmation that there is a state of affairs in the actual world in which just God alone exists. And there is no universe or created order existing with him. But then God acts to bring the universe into being at its first moment, at T equals zero. So that highlights the fact that a robust biblical doctrine of creation, I think, affirms a tensed theory of time according to which the distinction between past, present, and future is real, not just subjective, and temporal becoming is real, not just subjective. Now, is there any question or comment about that before we go further?
All right, first the comments. It seems like under your view of the B theory of time, nothing ever comes into being, ever, because coming into being requires tense time. Okay.
Yes, I think that's right, Drew.
All right. And secondly, how do you explain the truth value of past statements? What is the truth maker for a fact about a past event on your view, which is presentism, that the present exists and the past and the future are unreal or non-existent?
All right. Drew is asking a very technical question here philosophically. The view is called truth maker theory. And this is a view that some philosophers hold whereby they think that if any proposition is true, there needs to be something in the world, something in reality, that makes it true. And on a tense theory of time, you can't say, for example, that dinosaurs existing during the Jurassic Age make it true that there were dinosaurs during the Jurassic Age. Why? Because they don't exist anymore on the tense theory of time, and therefore they can't be the truth makers for that proposition. And I would say simply, Drew, that that is a very good reason to reject truth maker theory. I don't think it's true that all propositions need to have truth makers, and it's not implied by a view of truth as correspondence. And you can give a number of other counterexamples of truths that plausibly don't need truth makers either. Ethical truths, I would say. Also, counterfactual truths of certain sorts about what would be the case if something were the case, which isn't the case. And a very good book on this, I can't remember the exact title now, unfortunately, is a book by Trenton Merricks, who is a very fine young Christian philosopher who's written a book called something like Truth and Ontology, in which he argues very forcefully that this truth-maker principle is simply wrong and is a too restrictive view of truth. So I don't think there need to be any truth-makers of these past tense propositions in order for it to be the case that, for example, there were dinosaurs in the Jurassic Age. Yes. Ben.
I hope I'm not getting ahead of you when I say this, but like I always went back and forth between the different theories of time until the last time you taught this, and the thing that completely convinced me that God exists within time once he created time was the whole idea that you said, you know, in God's view, Jesus would always be on the cross, evil would always exist.
Yes.
I mean, the devil would always be around. There would be no completion of sin. It would never actually be completed. It would always be there. Jesus would always be on the cross.
Do you see the point that Ben's making? Let's imagine that the event at T2 here is, say, the crucifixion of Jesus. Well, even if it's true that at T3 the cross is vacant and the tomb is empty and Jesus is risen from the dead, on this tenseless theory of time, Jesus is still... still, that's misleading, but you see what I mean? He's still on the cross at T2. His crucifixion is earlier than the empty tomb, and both of them are equally real. The evil that exists in creation is never really done away with. It's never vanquished. It's always there. It's just that later portions of the block are free of the stain of evil. But the stain still permeates the first part of the block. So this is a different objection to the tenseless theory of time. And I think a very powerful one, as you do, Ben.
I think a biblical one.
I think it's not only incompatible with creation, but it's really deeply disturbing with respect to what it implies about things like the crucifixion and the reality of evil and God's triumph over death and evil. Yes, Eric, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Does this tensed view of time necessitate a rejection of the Einsteinian interpretation of relativity, in which some objects would reach, say, T2 before others?
Very, very good question, Eric. It does not entail a rejection of Einstein's interpretation of relativity. What it would reject is would be a rejection of Minkowski's interpretation. Do you remember several weeks ago when we talked about those results from CERN in which they detected neutrinos traveling faster than the speed of light? I pointed out that there are three different physical interpretations of the equations of relativity theory. Einstein's original interpretation, the space-time interpretation of Minkowski, and then the interpretation of the Dutch physicist Lorentz. And Einstein's view, originally in 1905, is completely consistent with the tensed theory of time. He presumed that objects are three-dimensional objects which endure through time. It's essentially a Newtonian view of space and time. It was only with Minkowski in 1908 that he said space and time as separate entities are doomed to fade away, and only a kind of fusion of the two will remain, which is this four-dimensional geometrical space-time object. So this picture that I've drawn here is a Minkowskian picture. It is a four-dimensional object. Of course, we can only draw three dimensions of it, given our limitations. One dimension has to be suppressed. But this would be a four-dimensional block in which time is the vertical dimension of the block. So this would not be incompatible, or rather a tense theory would not be incompatible with Einstein. It would not be incompatible with Lorentz. But it would be incompatible with this four-dimensional view of Minkowski. And so given my commitment theologically as well as philosophically to a tensed theory of time, that's why I would reject the Minkowskian interpretation that is the textbook in presentation in most physics books today.
If I'm understanding you correctly, then, since God has always existed, then upon creation, he created time, to which he entered time, and therefore time would continue infinitely into the future. But it would then be part of time in the future.
That's my view, Cindy. That would
so
be the position I would hold.
So time did not exist in prior to creation.
Excuse me?
Are you suggesting that time did not exist prior to creation?
Well, we have to...
always existed?
No, that's a different question, whether or not time has always existed. That's a separate question. My own view is that there are good reasons to think that time is not infinite in the past, but the time did have an absolute beginning, and that when God created time, he entered into time in order to sustain relations with this changing spatiotemporal world that he has made. But that's a somewhat separate issue.
The timelessness of God prior to creation.
Yeah, I would put it this way, Cindy. I would say the timelessness of God without creation. Because if you say prior, you see,
yes,
if that's a temporal word,
tense, right,
then you're implying there was a time before he created time,
right,
which is self-contradictory. So the way I like to talk about it is God's situation sans creation, or without creation, or God alone without creation?
And the, therefore, given time and his involvement and part of time, would it ought not be the future would then, after the world as the New Jerusalem, continues in the time spectrum, if you will.
That's right. Think of what the Bible promises. To those who believed in him, he gave the power to become children of God, so that they might have everlasting
forever.
Life. So this will be everlasting into the future.
Still tensed.
Right. Yeah. Yes, that's right. But to draw it back to our discussion of creation, I think you can see why on the four-dimensional tenseless view, there is no state of affairs of God existing sans creation or without creation. Creation is co-eternal with God.
Well, he's outside of time.
He's outside of time on this model, and he just sustains this spatiotemporal block.
Removed from and created and still separate from it's that model.
It,
affecting.
Given the definition of creation that I've given, I don't think you can characterize this as creation. Now, that's going to be the next point that I'm going to get to. Say I'm wrong. Say the four-dimensional tenseless view is right. Well, in that case, God didn't create the four-dimensional block, and yet in some way it depends on him for its being, right? It wouldn't exist without him. So even though he doesn't create it, what is the relation between God and the world then? Well, I'm going to talk about that in the sequel here. All right, any other question about this review? Well, let's get David on the way back to Dr. Bob.
I think I'm on your same point about the tenseless view. Why could God not create the time as a tenseless, even though that seems a little odd? That also implies that time is infinite in the negative direction. So why couldn't God be alone and then create this block with a beginning, so to speak?
I think the reason, David, is that what that would do is to posit a sort of hyper-time in which God creates time. So you would have first imagine God existing alone. Then, boom, God existing with the block. Well, that's a before and after relation. So there would have to be a kind of hyper-time in which God created time. And then you're back to the same problem again. God would still then be in time. So you would be simply kicking the problem upstairs, I think. Yes, you still then are stuck with the A theory or the tensed theory in the end. So that would be only if you went this route of positing this time above time, which is sort of a useless fifth wheel. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't get you anywhere. Yes, Dr. Bob?
Yes. Bill, it would appear to me that the B theory of time is perfectly valid, but only for God, because he has a unique ability to go to any point in eternity past, any point in eternity future, and make it equally real for him.
Mm-hmm.
We're stuck with temporal becoming and A, you know, A theory. And then I have another comment about, to me, I would define time as what fills in between sequences, sequential events.
Yes.
So God's very existence required, I don't believe he created time and then entered it. His existence requires time, because if he acts or even if he just thinks, those are sequential events.
Yes.
And something has to fill in between them.
Yes.
And it may be that he has his own system of time, which is unique to him. He can toggle back and forth between his and ours. His has no temporal becoming. It is a B theory. He's not in any way limited by time, but we are. And he can toggle into our sense of time or his sense of time at his will. What do you think about that?
Well, without wanting to recapitulate everything that we said when we did the attributes of God and talked about God's relationship to time, I would say that while that view is one that many people find attractive, I can't make sense of it. It seems to me that if you say that God is able to see all of time in a block-like way and access all of it, that it's all equally real for him, then it must be all equally real. And I just simply can't make sense of how time could be a B series for God, but an A series for us. It seems to me that that just is to say that we have the illusion of being in a kind of time in which becoming is real and we experience the difference between past, present, and future, but ultimately, really, it's not. It's really just a human illusion. And that just is the tenseless view. Now, in terms of whether time is always with God, that's going to depend, Bob, I think, on whether or not you think God is changeless or not. If you do think God is thinking sequentially, as you put it, then you're absolutely right. There will be time in between God's thoughts. They will be ordered in time. And that is a classical Newtonian view. That is Isaac Newton's view of God, that God and time are inseparable, and that therefore time is infinite in the past. It is the duration of God. But if you hold to the classical doctrines of God's changelessness, or even stronger, his immutability, his unchangeableness, then God doesn't experience a sequence of thoughts, and so you don't have to fill in time in between the thoughts. God's thoughts would simply be timeless. And I have real sympathies for the idea of God being timeless, at least without creation, and therefore I'm not inclined to adopt this Newtonian view.
Why would his having a thought mean that he would change? His core would not change. In other words, doesn't that view require that he's different now that he's had thought A before?
You had talked about a sequence of thoughts, Bob, where he thinks one thing and then he thinks something else. For example, the son says to the father, "I love you," and the father says to the son, "I love you." And these aren't simultaneous, they're sequential. Right. As you put it, there'd need to be time to fill in. Right. The gap. So that would give you a God in time, not a changeless God. That would be a God that's
changing. I guess I just can't see that as a change. Having a thought doesn't really change his core attributes.
Sure, it does. Think that's a stream of consciousness. Think of your own, if you close your eyes and you just experience that stream of consciousness in your mind, that's clearly mental change that's just constantly going on and would require time. So if you think of God as being changeless, especially without creation, I think it's more natural to think of God as timeless. All right, let's take one more question here from Brad.
So being an engineer and not a scientist, I have an application kind of question.
Great.
How does God see the future? Does God see the future, or does he create the future, or what?
Very good question, Brad. Notice how Brad put his question. I think there's interesting presuppositions being made. How does God foresee the future? Now, notice this kind of language. He foresees what will happen, or he has foresight of the future, presupposes that God's knowledge is on the model of sense perception. He looks and sees what's out ahead of us. And on a tense theory of time, it's difficult to make sense of that because the future isn't there to see. It doesn't exist. And so on a tense view of time, the idea of God's foreseeing the future doesn't seem to make sense. And I think that that's the correct conclusion to draw. It doesn't make sense. And that therefore we should not think of God's knowledge on the model of sense perception. That is easy and natural to do, but I think it's mistaken. We should think of God's knowledge more as a conceptualist model of knowledge. Plato thought that we never really learn anything. We just have innate ideas that we're born with. And learning is simply recovering or becoming aware of those innate ideas that we already possess but are submerged in subconsciousness. Now, that may not be a plausible model of human education, but I think it's a very plausible model for God's mind. God simply has an infinite store of knowledge of all and only true propositions, and he doesn't need to learn anything or to acquire his knowledge. He just has it innately. And so we should think of his knowledge more in this conceptual model rather than a perceptual model. So he would know the future simply in virtue of the fact that he knows all future tense propositions. Just as he knows all past tense propositions and present tense propositions, he knows all future tense propositions or all tenseless propositions. You can make a proposition tenseless by adding in a date, like Christopher Columbus discovers America in 1492. And there the verb discovers is just a tenseless verb. It's neither past, present, nor future. Christopher Columbus discovers America in 1492. If that's ever true, it's always true. And similarly, I think God could have this kind of tenseless knowledge in the state of affairs of his existing alone without creation. Now, if you press this conceptualist model further and say, but how does he have knowledge of these future tense propositions? There, I think the theory of middle knowledge will provide extra insight into how God knows the future. If you have a doctrine of middle knowledge, foreknowledge of the future just falls out automatically as a consequence. So I simply refer you back to our discussion of divine omniscience when we did the attributes of God and look at the section on middle knowledge. If you weren't in the class at that time, you can go on reasonablefaith.org where the podcasts are all there and available, and you can listen to the lessons that were given on divine omniscience as part of our study of the attributes of God. Now, I think it's been good to have this discussion this morning to review and clarify what we've been doing. Where I want to move next week is to ask the question, does the doctrine of conservation also presuppose a tensed theory of time? I've argued that a robust biblical doctrine of creation presupposes that time is tensed, not tenseless. What about conservation, the doctrine that God preserves the world in being from one moment to the next? Does that also presuppose a tensed view of time? That will be the question that we'll look at next week.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.